going first. Which?
Okay. Our next presentation on neighborhood socioeconomic structure and major depression in urban environments is going to be presented by two people. The first is Dr. Chris Combe, who is at the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the University of Michigan, and Cheryl Weir, I hope I pronounced that right, at the Health Disparities Reduction and the Department of Health Disparities Reduction and Minority Health at the Michigan Department of Community Health. So I think Chris is going first.
Thank you. Well, now you will get to hear a little bit of our work on neighborhood effects, because we are looking at neighborhood effects on health, in particular major depression. We have no commercial interests to report. Okay, so a little bit of background here. Residential stability is one end of a continuum of continuity or stability and flux of people living in a neighborhood. And it's long been considered to be protective of health, protective and beneficial to health because of the ties that might generate resources, social resources, economic resources, and political resources in communities that may adhere both to the individuals and to the communities themselves. However, the effects of residential stability on health appear to depend on the socioeconomic status of the neighborhood. So stability may be beneficial in affluent areas and detrimental to health in impoverished areas where there are less resources available to be protective for health. Now, in light of this work that's been done, the affluent work has only been done in fairly high-income areas. And given that in economically disinvested urban areas, there's been substantial loss of middle-income residents in communities, there's been little or no study of the effects of residential stability in middle-income areas in economically distressed cities, which is what this study is about.
So the objective is to examine whether the proportion of middle-income households in a neighborhood modifies the effect of neighborhood residential stability on major depression among residents. Our setting is in the city of Detroit. And just a little background of Detroit, it's an older industrial city that has experienced tremendous change over the past 50 years. Detroit is historically a vibrant city. It was an industrial city, and still is to some extent, with a strong economic base, high rates of home ownership. In fact, at one point, Detroit had the highest rate of home ownership in the nation, with over 100 distinct and historic neighborhoods. However, in the past 50 years, there has been deindustrialization and extreme regional and racial segregation, and those things have led to an economic and a regional shift in Detroit and in the surrounding area. Substantial population loss, and at one point Detroit had upwards of 2 million people. Now that number is about 950,000 in the city proper. And a racial shift, partially due to both white and black middle class flight. Started out with a lot of white flight, but over the last 20 years or so, that flight, the black middle class, has also started to leave the city in large numbers. Concentration of economic resources, jobs, and wealth have moved from the city to the surrounding suburbs, and increases in poverty within Detroit and substantial loss of both affluent and middle-income families, as I mentioned previously. In this context, we took the effects of neighborhood residential environments on mental health, and we're looking at that in relation to the city of Detroit.
I'm sorry.
This is the dance that we do.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry. Right. And just to give you some background on the Healthy Environments Partnership, the Healthy Environments Partnership is a community-based participatory research partnership, and we have been working since 2000 to understand and address the aspects of social and the physical environments that contribute to racial and ethnic and socioeconomic disparities in heart disease in the city of Detroit. That list below is the list of partner organizations who make up the Healthy Environments Partnership: Brightmoor Community Center, Detroit Department of Health and Wellness Promotion, Detroit Hispanic Development Corporation, Friends of Parkside, Henry Ford Health System, Rebuilding Communities Incorporated, University of Michigan School of Public Health, and Community Members, of course.
Okay, so what we did is performed a multi-level logistic regression using HLM, hierarchical linear modeling, a two-level model of looking at individuals as nested in neighborhood environmental context. Our individual level data, as you can see, 919 respondents in a community survey that HEP did in about 2002-2003, which is a stratified proportional random sample. And this sampling was done to assure a mix of African American, Latino, and white adults residing in three distinct communities in Detroit. Now, those communities are comprise the neighborhood level data, which is from the 2000 census summary file, and it is at the block group level. Some of the characteristics of the sample: again, the sample was selected to attain an approximate representation, equal representation, approximate, by race, ethnicity, and income within the context of Detroit. So you can see the mix there at the individual level. Neighborhood, again, there's a high proportion of residential stability. I don't think I mentioned earlier that residential stability is typically measured as the proportion of residents in a neighborhood, or the percent in a neighborhood, who have lived there for 5 years or longer. And it's a relatively high rate of residential stability in Detroit. And again, in terms of income, the neighborhoods are represented by approximately a third of the neighborhoods are middle income, a third are low or moderate income, and a third are impoverished neighborhoods. The median income, you can see, $27,000, is substantially lower than the U.S. median, which is about $42,000. Okay, so our dependent variable is major depression. And what we're looking at is diagnosable depression within the previous 12 months as measured by the CD. If you look here at the difference in the prevalence between what we found in our survey and the national prevalence based on David Williams' study in 2007, we've got a substantial burden of major depression in Detroit. The covariates in these analyses were covariates that have been associated in past studies with both depression and neighborhood level predictors, so that we would be able to determine the neighborhood effects above and beyond the individual characteristics of the sample. For the neighborhood measures, again, a census block group, we used residential stability, percent residents living in the same house 5 years earlier, and then you can see that there's a substantial range. And for middle income, we used a measure of household income of equal or greater than $40,000. As I mentioned, the sample, although it's a greater than measure, the $40,000, there were relatively low, higher income neighborhoods. So the results. This first graph here is looking at the rate of depression, the predicted probability of depression, which is on the y-axis, for the highest risk group of people who would be at highest risk of depression, by residential stability, which is across from the left to the right, very low stability or unstable neighborhoods going to stable neighborhoods on the right. And this is for the neighborhoods which have the highest proportion or percent of middle-income households. That's where about half of the neighborhood is middle class. And you can see that there's a substantial difference, a protective effect, if you will, of stability in those neighborhoods, almost a threefold difference in depression between the unstable and stable neighborhoods. So then we looked at neighborhoods that have approximately a third middle-income residents. And those are, though you can see there's no interaction effect in those models. Oh, I also neglected to say here that the effect was, the interaction effect was significant at the 0.008 level. And then finally, here we're looking at neighborhoods that have a very low percent of middle-income households, 20%, and you see that the rate of depression is very high among the stable neighborhoods and much lower in the unstable neighborhoods. This shows the whole picture together of the joint effects of stability and middle-income composition. And I think one thing that was particularly notable here is that what's on the right hand over there has been demonstrated in the literature before. In other words, that when you've got very stable, low-income neighborhoods, that it's maybe a constrained mobility and it has a substantial effect on depression. Whereas when you've got very stable middle-income neighborhoods, there are more resources available and stability is protective. What was not expected was this pretty substantial crossover effect, where we found that in middle-income neighborhoods, there's an enormous burden there, a predicted probability of depression of 0.45 that's comparable to that in the lowest income neighborhoods. And likewise, it was somewhat surprising to find that in the very unstable, or you might look at it as high turnover, low-income neighborhoods, that there was a relatively low predicted probability of depression. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we think might be happening here, particularly on that left side of the graph.
So some discussion about those results. The effects on depression are substantial. They are between 2.5 to 3 times greater probability of depression, depending on the income in the neighborhood. Size for those are with the highest risk of depression is predicted. The highest probability is 0.45, as Chris just said. Some possible explanations for that is that compared to their stable counterparts, unstable neighborhoods for middle income neighborhoods, in transition, is transitioning economically downward, whereas for low income, it may be individual level. The transition may be affecting on the individual level as opposed to on the neighborhood level. For high middle income neighborhoods that are experiencing disinvestment, the decline in material conditions due to white flight, or as I said before, black middle class flight, and that might be what they're experiencing. And also in declining property values. Individuals may be suffering from acute stress and the loss of stable middle income, employment, and home values due to foreclosure. And also increased crime may be at work here. So the possible composition is who's left behind, and who's left behind, that may have a lot to do with how people are, their depression levels. Also, for low-income neighborhoods, for individuals in transition, opportunities for mobility, even if laterally, may have effect on the depression levels there. And lastly, we need our next steps would be to examine those neighborhoods to find out what's going on. And also some qualitative research might be needed.
Okay, limitations and strengths. Of course, again, this is cross-sectional, so we can't assume causality. There may be compositional effects as of who's left behind, even though we did control for individual level factors. And then I already mentioned some things about the measures. What I didn't mention about residential stability is it doesn't account for loss in a neighborhood. So, for example, if you've got a stable neighborhood, say all 10 people who live there have been there more than 5 years, these people leave the neighborhood, and it still is a stable neighborhood because everybody has lived there more than 5 years. So future studies will be looking at issues such as vacant land or vacant properties and some of the other characteristics of the neighborhood. One of the strengths is that, of course, looking at the complex interaction of different structural features within neighborhoods at a fairly small level. So we need to understand aspects of neighborhood change and the underlying mechanisms by which neighborhood characteristics do interact to influence health. And we need to develop interventions both at the structural level and at the treatment level that look specifically at the configurations of neighborhoods. Among those, as urban planners are developing their policies to how to invest in cities, how to regenerate cities, we also need to take into account the health impact of these configurations of neighborhoods to prevent further decline in middle-income neighborhoods, and then to include economic and mobility supports for lower-income residents while attracting and retaining middle-income residents. Any questions? Yes. This is in the e-centrals or whatever.
It'll be on the APHA e-learning website. I think you can.
So if you've subscribed to that, I think there's a fee to subscribe to it. It will be available. But if you'd be interested in it also, you could email me. Or talk to me. No, you could see you later. Any comments, questions? Yes. We did look at individual level length of residence only as a confounder, so as a covariate. So the answer is no, and there are some other things we didn't look at, like comorbidity with depression, for example, or existing depression. But that'll be the next study, future work. Okay? Time for one more?
Very quickly, just while I load this.
Yes.